We'll move now to appeals 24-2224 and 25-1278. Gladys Chavez Pineda versus Blanche. We'll begin with oral argument on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Marshall.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Jonathan J. Marshall from Jenner & Block for the petitioner, Ms. Chavez Pineda. The board gave two reasons why Ms. Chavez Pineda was ineligible for asylum. First, that her particular social group is circularly defined, and second, that Ms. Chavez Pineda could not show a nexus between her membership in the social group and her persecution at the hands of the Mara 18 gang. In reaching each of those conclusions, the agency made a legal error under this court's precedent, and a remand is warranted for that reason. I'd like to start, if I may, with the nexus issue, because that's where the government principally defends the agency's conclusion. The board's rationale on nexus, and this is on page 5 of the short appendix at the back of the blue brief, is that under this court's precedent, if the persecutor's primary motive is financial, then the asylum claim fails on nexus, and that's just the end, period. But that is just a flatly incorrect statement of law, and this court, certainly not a correct statement of what this court has articulated. What this court has said is that the standard is that membership in the social group does not need to be the primary motive for the persecution. In fact, it can be the secondary or tertiary motive, in this court's words, in footnote 6 of CC and in Shaikh versus Holder, as long as it plays more than a minor role in the persecution. And that standard comes from the INA itself, which says not that membership in social group has to be the sole reason for persecution or the primary reason, but just that it has to play at least a central role. This court hasn't just articulated that standard in the abstract. It has actually applied that standard in case after case of mixed motive asylum claims to find that asylum applicants had met their burden as to nexus. So I think where that has been most stark is in this court's Tapiero de Orihuela case, which was the case where the social group was educated land-owning cattle farmers who were being persecuted by FARC in Colombia. So what this court said, and that was a financially motivated persecution where the FARC was demanding money from the asylum applicants. And this court said, sure, that the motive for the persecution is financial. Sure, FARC would be very happy to rob anybody that they could get their hands on. But still, there's a valid claim here because the reason these particular people were targeted was their membership in the social group. That was the reason that FARC targeted them in particular. And that's the essence of Ms. Chavez Pineda's claim here. Even if it's true that the gang is motivated to fill their coffers, in the IJ's words, the reason that Ms. Chavez Pineda was in their crosshairs was because she was part of an especially vulnerable group of individuals as a single mother, and particularly once she resisted the gang, that she incurred the wrath even further. And that in that way, it's particularly parallel to this court's en banc decision in CC. Again, that case didn't involve a claim of animus toward the members of the social group. The persecutors there were sex traffickers. They didn't have animus toward women who were living alone. They were financially motivated persecutors. They were looking to make money by trafficking women into prostitution. But that didn't doom the asylum claim. There was still a valid claim because the reason that Joanna Cici was targeted by the persecutors was because she was a member of an especially vulnerable class of women, those living alone. And that's why she was targeted. And so too here, the reason Ms. Chavez Pineda was targeted by the gang, even if it's true that the gang thought she had money, was because as a single mother in a patriarchal society.
You're very clear on that, and you're underscoring it time and again, but what evidence do you have of that?
So
in other words, just change her gender. Assume that the exact same thing had happened to a widowed male business owner. How is it any different?
Well, Ms. Chavez Pineda put in a good deal of evidence before the IJ that her status as a single mother in particular was the reason the gang targeted her.
What's that evidence?
So first, there's the circumstantial point that when her husband was alive and operating his business, there was no problem with the gang, and it was only after her husband died that the gang targeted her. Also, country conditions evidence showing how Honduras is an extraordinarily gendered society where women are murdered with near impunity. Women are seen as property of men. That was part of her presentation to the agency of why her role as a single mother put her in an especially vulnerable position as well. She also testified that she thought the reason that the gang approached her was not just because they thought she had a life insurance payout, but also it was because she was vulnerable as a single mother. She testified before the IJ she put in as part of her sworn statement, and this is at pages 247 to 248 of the administrative record in the first appeal, that in her experience, the MO of the Mara 18 in her area was that they go after single mothers and other people who have no one, single women and people who have no one to protect them. But none of this appears in the IJ opinion or in the board opinion, because the board just simply seemed to take the view, incorrect view under this court's precedent, that if the primary motive is financial, that's just the end of the case. And again, this court has in case after case, held that that's not true. I talked about Tapiero de Orihuela. I talked about Sisi. You know, the Escobar case is another example where FARC was interested in trucking services. That is a private motive for the gang, but still there was a valid asylum claim because the reason the particular asylum applicant was caught up was because of their status as a former trucker. NLA versus Holder, another example. A case not discussed in the briefs, but a more recent case of this court in Gonzalez Ruano. This is a case where the asylum applicant was targeted by the cartel in Jalisco, Mexico, because a leader of the cartel wanted the victim's wife. It was a privately motivated persecution that the persecutor wanted the victim's wife. But still, the reason that the applicant was caught up in that persecution was because he was a member of the social group of his wife's family. So again, time after time, this court has said in mixed motive cases, as long as it's at least plays more than a minor role, the membership in the social group, there's a valid claim. And the agency simply did not apply that principle here, and that warrants a remand as to nexus. As to the circularity, I think it's even more straightforward that the agency just misapplied this court's precedent. I think CC is quite emphatic on this point as what it means for a social group to be circularly defined. A social group is circularly defined if it is defined exclusively or solely on the basis of the persecution. For example, a social group defined by people imprisoned by a particular government without any due process, that would be solely defined based on the persecution. That's not at all what Ms. Chavez-Pineda's social group looks like. Honduran, single mothers, those have nothing to do with persecution. We don't think that resistance to the gang is a reference to persecution, but even if it were, that wouldn't matter under CC because the other characteristics are not.
Would you like to reserve the remainder of your time?
I would. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Marshall. We'll now move to oral argument on behalf of the appellee, Mr. Stanton.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Bo Stanton. I'm here today on behalf of the United States Attorney General. There are two overarching issues in this case. The first one is the one that's been hammered upon by opposing counsel, whether or not petitioner is eligible for asylum and withholding removal based on her membership in a particular social group composed of Honduran single mothers who do not comply with MARA demands. Substantial evidence supports the agency's decision in this case that there is no nexus between her fear and the alleged harm that she experienced and her membership in this particular social group. There is no evidence in her credible fear interview, in her testimony, in her asylum application, simply no evidence in the record at all that she was targeted because she was single, that she was a mother, that she was Honduran, or that she refused to comply with the demands of the gang. Instead, based on her words in writing and in testimony, the gangs targeted her for money. They described it as a war tax. They sent messages by text messages through her phone and through letters through an employee at a shop that she owned. And those messages repeated the same thing over and over again. Give us money. Give us money. That is something that she was consistent about throughout the entire course of her case. Petitioner's counsel does not identify any evidence in the record that shows that she was targeted for being.
What about Mr. Marshall's point that by inference, you can get there because this wasn't happening during the time her husband was alive?
Oh, Your Honor, that is a bit of a stretch because they're relying on this idea that timing, you need to look at the timing of when the threat started. Let's go ahead and focus on the timing of these threats. The threats themselves did not take place until 10 months after the death of her husband. And so did the gang wait 10 months to go ahead and finally target her because she was now a single mother who now owned a shop that made money. I mean, we would really have to strain our thoughts to get to that conclusion, especially when there is no other evidence to corroborate this fact. Instead, 10 months went by. All of a sudden, in February of 2015, she receives text messages to her phone, threatening to harm her if she doesn't provide money. And indeed, at her credible fear interview, the very first opportunity she gets to describe her fear of returning back to her home country, she says, "I fear returning to Honduras because of the extortion of the gangs." You can find this on 269 of the record. And she repeats at this credible fear interview, "They wanted money because of the shop. They sent me messages that they wanted money. They thought my husband left me money and insurance." And even on this point, it's speculation, because during testimony, petitioner testified that she believes that the gangs targeted her because her husband passed away, left her a shop, and left her some life insurance money. But she testified, she never testified that that was indeed why they targeted her. She had to engage in speculation to get there. So you look at the words that she wrote, you look at the words that she said based on this record, she made it clear that she was targeted because she had money. And indeed, this is substantial evidence that supports the agency's decision that she's not entitled to asylum or withholding based on her membership on a particular social group. Because the nexus issue is dispositive of these claims for asylum and withholding or removal, it is unnecessary for this court to reach the issue of whether or not the particular social group is cognizable under the precedent of this circuit. But now we can turn to the second petition for review, that is in this case, whether or not the agency abuses discretion in denying her motion to reopen her case. The entire basis for her motion to reopen was that her daughter had been granted relief to stay here in the United States. She got a special juvenile immigrant visa. Petitioner claimed that she should be allowed to stay in the country because her daughter would be without a parent if she were removed back to Honduras. Unfortunately, there is no basis in regulation or anywhere under the law for an individual to remain in the United States simply because they want to be here to parent their child. And because there was no legal basis, no factual basis at all for her to show that her case would be different if it were reopened, the agency did not abuse its discretion in denying her motion to reopen. So when you step back and look, the agency, this decision, asylum withholding removal, substantial evidence supports it on the nexus issue. Case over.
Mr. Stanton, am I right that Ms. Chavez-Pineda has been removed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Does the government agree there's nothing moot, notwithstanding that? The petition's still alive?
Yes, the petition is still alive, despite her removal. Yes, Your Honor. And if there are no other questions, the petition will rest on these arguments.
Thank you, Mr. Stanton.
Thank you.
Mr. Marshall, we'll return to you now for rebuttal argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of points in response. My friend from the government said that there was, quote, no evidence that Ms. Chavez-Pineda put before the agency to support her theory that membership in the social group was a basis for persecution. That's just incorrect.
It sounds like the only evidence to me is the country characteristics. Because you made the point about she was, nobody bothered her when her husband was alive. But that could be reversed. I mean, Judge Scudder asked you about if she was a man. Nobody bothered them while they were together. One of them dies, and then they're extorted for money. But that doesn't point to any evidence of sex. Well, at this point, there were two, then there were one.
Well, I think it at least supports the inference, Judge Kirsch, that the reason that the gang set their sights on her was because she was now a single mother, whereas before she was not a single mother.
Would they set their sights on a single father?
I'm not sure if they would or they wouldn't, but even if they would, I don't think that undermines her claim at all, which is that, in fact, the reason that they came after her was because she was in a vulnerable population. So I think this court made the point in Cici as well that if they would come after women who didn't live alone, that doesn't undermine the claim of a woman who does live alone. My friend pointed out Ms. Chavez-Pineda's testimony. He said there was nothing in her testimony to support her claim. That's incorrect. At pages 123 and 137 of the administrative record in the first case, Ms. Chavez-Pineda testified before the IJ that the reason she thought the gang came after her was because she was a single mother. She also testified at page 120 that she thought maybe the gang thought she had a life insurance payout, but that was not the only reason she put before the agency.
Tell me, just slow down 1 second. Yeah, tell me those page, no, you're fine. Tell me those page references again.
Sorry, 123 and 137 of the AR, that's part of the, that's
123 and 137.
That's part of her testimony before the IJ. And then 247 and 248, she makes similar statements in her sworn statement, also submitted as part of the evidentiary record. So it's just not right to say that she put no evidence before the agency to support her theory as to why she was persecuted. And then briefly, with my remaining time, on the second petition for review, my friend said that there was no basis under regulation for the agency to provide any relief to Ms. Chavez-Pineda. That's also not correct. Under 8 CFR 10.03.18 sub C and sub D, the agency can reopen for equitable reasons and then administratively close a case or terminate a case. That's exactly what Ms. Chavez-Pineda asked for at pages 12 to 13 of the administrative record in the second appeal. The agency had discretion what to do with that, but as this court has explained, it must explain the reason it was exercising its discretion not to reopen, and that's why we're asking for a remand for the agency to describe its reason. So we ask that the court grant the first petition, barring that, that the court grant the second petition. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Marshall. Thank you, Mr. Stanton. The case will be taken under advisement.